Philip Morgan.
L-A-W or Liston.io. Sorry, that's now what I refer to you as.
Liston.io. Yes, it is me. Someone asked me today, what is .io? And I wasn't sure how to answer that. I said, really? Well, it's a period in two letters.
That's so deep.
I know. I thought she was asking, like, what kind of domain is that? And actually, most domains are based on a country code. And I have no idea what .io is.
And when they started coming out with new top-level domains, TLDs, it was one of the earlier new TLDs. And it's sort of like, in computer terms, like from the 70s, it would refer to input-output.
Yes, of course.
So it's kind of become a magnet for like startup domain names or techie type things.
Except TLDs, top level domains. I love that you know that, by the way. TLDs are based on countries or territories. And I just looked it up. The IO domain is the internet country code top level domain assigned to, do you want to take a guess, Philip?
Indonesia? No, that would be probably IN, right? That might be India.
British Indian Ocean Territory.
I'm super baffled and super curious about that. I mean, remember when they came out with the ones that were like .consulting, .XXX? There was this whole sort of wave of like expanding the namespace. I thought it was the early part of that, but I think you're probably right. And it was just some country code that got sort of appropriated for another purpose. The Indian Ocean.
So .co, a lot of companies will snatch up .co because the .com is taken. And .co is the country code for Colombia. But it doesn't really matter.
Interesting.
Now, I will say, next time I'm asked, what is .io? The answer, well, of course, it's the country code assigned to the British Indian Ocean Territory is much more interesting than input-output. I'm going to do that.
Here's what I think you should do instead. So let's role play this. You ask me, what is the .io domain name?
Hey, Philip, what's this .io all about?
Your mom.
Isn't that .mom?
Oh, sorry. I thought that would go over better.
All right. Well, so Philip, do you have something that you would like to promote today?
Yeah, I do a podcast called the Consulting Pipeline Podcast. I think it's pretty good. I'm always working away at, well, let's be honest, not always working away, but recently have been working away at making it better. So that would mean more regular publication and a little more planning and prep put into some of the episodes. And trust me, it's already a great podcast. I'm just working on making it great again. I'm trying to make podcast great again. And I think I'm succeeding.
That's a winning slogan, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I've got a little red hat that you can buy at the merch store.
Uh-huh.
I'm kidding. But I think I am making it great again. So if folks are interested in hearing even more of me, but in a sort of solo / interview format, they might check out consultingpipelinepodcast.com for even more of me in your ears.
In your ear hole. Well, I want to promote something exactly along those same lines, and that is the Liston.io show. Now, you may be wondering, why in the hell do you need more Liston? Why do you need more Philip? Well, the short answer is maybe you don't. I don't know. I can't answer that for you. However, if you want advice specifically about building a better consulting business that brings in lots of outside voices and also occasionally, not occasionally, every other episode, I will rant is the wrong word. I will thoughtfully describe and convey 20 to 30 minutes of actionable advice for your consulting business. You can check it out. So the Liston.io show, it is newly released and launched. So if you do check it out, I'd love it if you could push subscribe and leave me a review if you're so inclined.
I subscribed today. I'm one of your early subscribers. I'm an early adopter of the Liston.io show.
Now, are you going to leave a review or do I have to give you something for free to get that?
Could leave a review. What should I say?
Maybe ask me, what is this .io all about? I wish I could respond to that.
I thought about subscribing, but I was really put off by the .io domain name. That's cultural appropriation.
Yeah, that would be awesome, Philip. Thank you.
All right. Considered done. Meaning I'm putting it on my to-do list and I might get to it.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to hold my breath, but I will be pleasantly surprised.
Priority one, tomorrow, review Liston.io show. All right. So what's our topic today, Liston?
So I've been saying this thing over and over and over again to anybody who will listen. And that thing is serve, don't sell. You can tell I practiced this. I was recording this on video. Serve, don't sell.
It just feels good to hear it.
I was doing it so many times when I was recording my last podcast. Actually, this is a quick aside. So you can see the offline of what we're really doing, dear listener. Yeah. Have you seen the Howard Stern movie, Private Parts?
No.
Where they're trying to teach him how to say NBC properly on the air. And they go, no, not NBC, NBC. And he's like practicing it with the manager over and over. It was just so ridiculous. Anyways, that's how I arrived at serve, don't sell. So this idea really was birthed from trying to obviously create something pithy for my business, but really trying to condense some of the advice that I give into something that was memorable and applied to almost all situations.
Would you say it's a worldview? Like, is it that big?
I would say it is a worldview.
It's definitely a big idea. Okay, so you would even say it's a worldview. It's like a filter that you see everything through.
I would say for the target audience that I want to reach and for the way that I know consultants sell their services,
yeah,
this is the right approach.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least that's what I believe is the right approach, is a more accurate way to say it. Now, at the same time, I have had this on my content to-do list for a long time. And maybe actually this would be a good podcast for me to record on the Liston.io show next. And that is this notion that no idea is a panacea, right? You can't take a single piece of advice and apply it to every single situation.
Get out. I'm done with this advice game.
Well, it's just interesting because when I started listening to podcasts, I was exposed to entrepreneurship, but I wasn't like in the thick of Tim Ferriss, Andrew Warner, like listening to basically every podcast I could find at the time and just listening to them over and over and over again and reading blog posts and Digital Marketer and HubSpot and all the places that teach marketing and online entrepreneurship. And inevitably within 3 to 6 months, I found that almost all advice was directly contradicted by other advice, right?
Yep.
And so it begs the question, is everybody wrong or is some advice just applicable to some situations? I swear, let's get back to this. This is going somewhere. Let's get back to this idea of serve, don't sell.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I have some ideas to give you for how to serve and not to sell.
Mm-hmm.
However, I wanted to kick it off with a story because as it turns out, Philip, I have acolytes in the world, people who actually listen to what I say and go out and implement it. And occasionally, this has only happened twice in full disclosure, my own words and advice are weaponized and pointed directly at me.
Taken a bit out of context, perhaps. We'll see.
All right. No, we're going to get to your reaction to this. So I received a message on LinkedIn from, I didn't look when he subscribed, but I think a fairly recent subscriber. He saw one of my videos. We connected and he says, "Hi, Liston. I've been thoroughly enjoying your newsletters since I have subscribed. I'm always looking for learning opportunities that challenge me to continue to develop myself beyond my level of comfort. Furthermore, I understand you've had the chance to view my profile once or twice since we connected," which I'm not exactly sure why that was. Maybe I was just seeing if he was a good prospect. He said, "I was curious if you might be able to provide any insight into how I could improve my LinkedIn profile. Although we do not have much personal experience together, your motto of start serving, stop selling, Philip, there's the weapon, really stands out to me, and I would greatly appreciate any insight you may have for me. Again, thank you for all your provided value thus far. Have an excellent week.
Mm-hmm.
My reading of this was, ah, clever little girl, right? Like Jurassic Park. Here he is trying to use my words against me to get something free out of me. That's the way I saw it. Because reviewing a LinkedIn profile well is not a small ask.
Okay. But isn't that a form of service? When I started the note in Asana that led to this topic, the way I phrased it was, how do you know when to stop serving and start charging? Or that might be another way to phrase this. Like, so it brings up that question. Like, maybe from that guy's perspective, it was totally legit to be asking you for a little bit of free advice. So what did you do? What happened next?
Well, so I haven't responded to it. So this is like a day or two old. So you added this to Asana at the perfect time because this just happened. Maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 days ago. So I have some mixed feelings about this, obviously.
Yeah.
So it's funny because we could say, start serving, stop selling, and then follow that up with stop serving, start charging, which would be extremely confusing for everybody, right?
Right.
I think that in this case, so if he was like, hey, do you have a pointer for me on improving my LinkedIn profile? That would be different than him saying, would you mind reviewing my LinkedIn profile and giving me any feedback you have? Because like, that's a pretty large ask to me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point, there must be a line somewhere where you should be charging for something, right? So if I get asked a question and I know that if I answer it, it'll have applicability to lots of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I post a piece of content and someone's asking me a question like, hey, I saw this thing you posted about asking good questions in the discovery process. What do you think of this question? Yeah, of course, I'll answer that, right?
Yeah.
It's in a public forum. Other people will benefit from it. It's relevant to the topic. I can do it in a minute or two. However, something that has no applicability to anybody else and falls squarely under the umbrella of what I would do in a transactional relationship is the way I'd like to put it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm getting paid to show up and help someone.
Mm-hmm.
That to me looks a lot like coaching. So I was actually thinking, I don't know, there's a couple of ways I could do this. The most obvious thing to do always, which is in the name of service, by the way, is just to ask, what kind of advice are you looking for?
Right. Try to scope it down to, he'll probably come back with a more specific version of that original question in response to that.
Ooh, you're more optimistic than me. I would say he'll probably be like, well, just anything that's on your mind. And I'd be like, okay. Well, what's on my mind is archiving this message.
That's not actually been my experience, but sure, that could happen. Or it could go the other way and he could say, well, you know, my headline, I don't know. That's the thing I'm struggling with the most.
Some percentage of people will have like, now that I'm forced to think about it, this is the area where I need the most help. And some other percentage of people will be like, I don't know, whatever, right? Like anything you could do would be helpful.
Yep.
And it's that second camp that then starts to feel like, how can I help you if you don't know how to help yourself? Like you don't even know where to focus your attention. And that becomes problematic for me. So to me, I could go back and say, is there a way for us to focus this? Or is there something specific on your mind about your LinkedIn profile that I might be able to help with? Another way that I could serve him and get something for me out of it that would sort of fall under the public blanket is to say, I'd be happy to give you a quick review so long as I can publish it.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I was going to suggest is it becomes a teardown type thing that you publish.
Yeah. I'm not big on teardowns for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. I think we may have talked about this before. Me too. You're missing so much context when you do it, like just a drive-by teardown.
Right. I mean, like I would need to know exactly what is the purpose of your LinkedIn profile, who comes here, what are you hoping it's going to do for you? What do you want people to do once they arrive? There's all kinds of things that I would need to know to really do well. Otherwise, I'm just another asshole pontificating about what I think, which may not be practical or useful for him.
Yeah.
I'm not big on the teardown idea. Another option would be to say, well, it could be a paid engagement where it's just like totally focused on I'm giving you feedback on your LinkedIn and some advice. That's not something I want to do right now. So it's not something I would offer. So yeah, in this scenario, I actually feel that serving is a little problematic. I mean, one thing I could have done that would have been fast is just to click through to his LinkedIn profile, find the first thing that pops up and say, I think this is a problem, or you can improve this by changing it to that, and spend 30 seconds on it. But that also feels devoid of context and not particularly in the best interest of serving him. And yeah. So this was one of those where I got it and I felt like you asked, where is the line? This is like one of the very gray areas where what he's asking me to do may take an hour, but it's not a month of coaching or consulting.
Yeah.
But it's not so fast or so applicable to other people that other people would get benefit from it too. So I don't know, man. This is a tough one.
Well, this is something that happens maybe more for people with businesses like yours and mine, where we're trying to build a platform that's kind of a public-facing thing. And there's a lot of free advice issuing forth from our microphone, from our keyboard. So I'm not sure it's like super relevant to maybe all of the listeners of this podcast, but it really does seem to be a sales process question more than anything. There's a phase of a relationship where you're serving and there's no money changing hands. I mean, time always has a cost, but aside from that, there's no money changing hands. But then there's like a line, and is it as simple as, well, when you submit the proposal, that's when you start getting paid or not getting paid? Or is it more nuanced than that? Like, is there a question of when do you submit a proposal? Like, when do you stop serving for free and suggest getting paid for the service?
You know, I think another way to look at it and think about it is, it really depends on your business model, but I think most people I talk to have somewhere between, say, 3 and 20 clients in a year. So if you're making $100,000, that's $5,000 to $33,000 per client. And my feeling is, at that level, I would really focus on playing the long game. Here's what the short game looks like, okay? Right? I get on one call and I say, yeah, I think I can help you. And a road mapping session is $4,000.
Okay.
And you're kind of like, well, I don't, like, who are, you're Philip, right? What was your name again? Yeah, Philip. I mean, we've only met for 30 minutes.
Right.
I understand there's definitely lots of good reasons to charge for a road mapping session. Again, I think it's very highly dependent on your business. Email me, liston@liston.io, if you want to chat road mapping, because I have lots of thoughts on that. Did we record an episode on that, Philip?
No, but I just added it to the list of topics. I think there's something there.
Yeah, don't email me. I take it all back. Don't email me. It'll come out soon, I promise.
Wait for the upcoming episode.
I'll give you an example. I met someone in person here in Portland. We sat down and we chatted for an hour. Great discussion. I gave him lots of sort of food for thought. And I just love talking to people about their business. I get a lot out of that because I'm learning when I ask a few questions and he goes, oh man, that's a really good question. I hadn't thought about that. And this guy has a very enviable business, wonderful business. Mm-hmm. And I get to see his face and see him light up based on what I'm saying and different ideas I have. Like, that's valuable to me because it helps me understand where I'm contributing and maybe where I'm not. Today, we had a follow-up call 2 or 3 weeks later. Again, great conversation. He's like, this is really good. Here's where I'm at. And maybe 3 months before I'm really ready. And here's what I said. To me, this is a perfect example of serving. I said, well, I know you don't want to engage for about 3 months. However, given the scope of what you're trying to accomplish, I think in the next month or two, we might actually want to get started. You don't have to make any decision about that right now. What I want to do is capture some of my thoughts on just a single piece of paper, and then we can continue the discussion. How does that sound?
Yeah.
Actually, he said, well, if you're willing to talk to me more, I would love that.
Okay.
Your reaction, Philip? because it's mounting.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to talk about road mapping because you're not going to spec a $100,000 software project for free. Or I think it would be irresponsible.
No.
It would be irresponsible to do that. But
that's worth adding, yes.
We need to dig into that more. So we're going to table that for now. I also feel like I play the long game in the way you're describing, in that I have, I wouldn't say like super intentionally done this, but I sort of envision a chicken sitting on eggs and like that process of incubating clients. And I feel like the incubation period for some of my clients has been, in some cases, more than 12 months, but around that number of months from first meaningful communication, meaning like they respond to an email on my list or an email that I have sent to my list, they might hit reply. And then we have a little back and forth. And then lo and behold, like a year later, they're ready to do something where the money changes hands. And so conceptually, I'm totally bought into this idea of playing the long game. But I also feel like there's a sort of a dating analogy. And it's like, you know, meet somebody, you've got some chemistry. When do you make the next move and suggest going out on a date? Or in this case, how did you know with this interaction you describe with this local business owner, how did you know to sort of take it to the next level? Was there something you saw? Was there a triggering event that you always look for? Of course, I'm trying to systematize this. I don't think it can be totally systematized, but I'm trying to do that to make it for our listeners something that is as easy as possible.
Yeah, that's a good question. So in this case, so when do you take it to the next level? That's a great question. So let's talk about what does it mean to serve?
Yeah.
I believe here's two perfect classic examples. You get on the phone, Philip, with someone who says, I want specialization school. And you say, great, let's talk about that later. Why do you think you need some help with specializing? Tell me about your business. And they start talking to you and you find out, you know what? Actually, you're specialized enough. What you need is more marketing effort, right? I had a call like this last week where the guy goes, do I need, it's funny. This has never happened to me. I wonder if he's listening. He sent me an email and he says, do I need your coaching? And I was like, no clue. I have no idea, right? Like, how would I know that? Let's get on a call. And in response, he sends me two PDFs that are over 10 pages long and asked me to read both of them before we talk.
What were the PDFs about?
They were all about his current situation and how much money he makes and the situation with his wife and his past experience and what his alternatives are. And I was just like, man, that is a lot.
I think that the word for that is a dossier, right? He sent you a dossier on himself.
Yes. And it included wedding mattresses.
Mm. So pivoting from that, what happened next?
So we're on the phone and he told me, so this is back to the idea of serving. He told me that in the past, for 1 year, he did a bunch of individual things. He spoke at an event. He did a cold email campaign. He did a few other things. And he's like, yeah, and I got work out of it. And I said, then what happened? He goes, well, I did nothing else. And I said, and then what happened? And he goes, well, I didn't get any other leads. And I said, well, I don't think, first of all, you should pay me a cent because I wouldn't feel comfortable taking your money because you're almost out of it. Secondly, you already know what you have to do. You've already been successful doing this. You're just not doing shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, so you're just saying it's lack of effort? I'm like, well, that's what you just told me.
Right.
So like, I'm just repeating back what I heard from you.
Yeah.
And so to me, that was a perfect moment of like, sure, I could help him be better at selling, but it didn't matter because he didn't have any leads coming in. He was already extremely specialized. And in many cases, I would send people to you, Philip, if they weren't specialized, but I'd say he was even too specialized. So I was like, look, man, you need to go out and talk to people and market and put yourself out into the world because that's what worked for you before. And no surprise, you stop doing it and nothing's going on. So to me, that would be an example of service in terms of telling someone, this isn't a fit. And like, I don't actually want to work with you because I don't think it's a good fit for us.
Do you ever, under this umbrella of service, get sort of, people think the problem is bigger than it really is. And in a 30, 45 minute call, you can give them essentially all the advice they need. Because I imagine there's situations like that where 5 minutes of do this, don't do that, plus a few months of them implementing that is like all they need at that moment anyway. Maybe not forever, but at that moment.
Often, yes.
And so is that another aspect of it to you of like, look, I'm not going to charge you thousands of dollars for something that we can do. I mean, I'm thinking of going to a doctor and, you know, there's nothing really wrong with you. And the doctor's like, look, you need to change your diet. So you get charged the consultation fee, but they're not going to charge you anything for something that you have to do yourself.
Totally. Yeah. That's a perfect example where if you go to them and you say, you know what, I'm short of breath and I'm having heart palpitations. And they're like, well, your blood pressure is through the roof. I could give you an MRI, but I mean, you and I both know all you have to do is just eat right for 3 months and you'll probably be fine.
Yes. Lay off the salt, buddy, or whatever.
So that's exactly my approach. Now, your original question is, when do you know how to take it to the next level? And so I wanted to give you one example of service in terms of saying, you know what? No, I don't think this is right. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, when it is right, this is service too, to say to someone, I can really help you. And I think we should continue this conversation because you're having the exact types of problems that I can solve. Would you like to keep talking?
Okay.
What's wrong with that? If your mentality is, my goal is to help this person, sometimes that means we should engage in a transactional relationship, right?
Oh, but slow down a little bit. So would you like to keep talking is basically you saying, would you like to start paying me to do this in a more formal, structured way, right?
Philip, if you've been paying attention to things beyond serve, don't sell. If you've been paying attention to things beyond that, then you would know I implore people to never pitch during discovery. So if I arrive at this idea that we should work together, or at least we should really explore that seriously, then in the next call, that's when I'm going to actually pitch my services.
Oh, okay. I know I'm sneaking. I am smuggling information out of your paid product here into the free open world.
No, actually, this is in my free, this is in salesin30.com.
Okay, so you have a little bit of a firewall between a conversation whose purpose is discovery and then pitching or saying, here are your options for working with me.
For the sake of simplicity. So what I would say the breaking point is uh-huh. where you would never, ever, ever pitch on a first call is if your product is $10,000 or above. But for you or me, because we're selling in the high three figures or low four figures, maybe I'll make the determination, hey, this is going so well. And like, we've covered everything we need to cover, where I would actually tell them. And usually I would ask, would you like to hear what it's like to work with me? And they'll say yes. And I'll say, okay, great. Like, here it is. Do you have any questions? But I would never do that until I'm confident that I can give them results.
You're tabling any discussion of us working together, you and this prospective client, until you're convinced that there's benefit to it or that there's value for them.
I am.
Or that there's a fit. Yeah, I approach it the same way.
Yeah, I'll push back because occasionally people will say, well, how much do you cost? What is it like to work with you? And that's, to me, most times it's just like, you might as well just hang up there because they're shopping, right? Mm-hmm. You're not seen as an expert by that person if they ask that.
I guess there's a sort of edge case there where you are an expert and you have fixed price diagnostic services or fixed price services of any kind, but that's kind of the edge case. Plenty of experts work on a totally custom basis where everything has a custom price and a proposal.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a red flag if they're talking price in the first 50% of a conversation.
Right.
That's price shopping for sure.
I wanted to share something with you. I'm bringing up some comments in my LinkedIn feed, but basically someone left a comment, of all things, a used car salesman. I'm not exaggerating.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. He really liked one of my videos, yeah. And he went on to comment how important it is to ask a question that I ask, that I was telling people to ask. It's so important in the closing process, he said. As I often do, I said, hey, thanks for checking this out. This was the question I told people to ask. How will things be different after you solve this problem that you have and accomplish your outcome? Mm-hmm. And he says, it reminds me of a very effective close, or start to a close anyways, the dreaded I want to sleep on it. So he's saying, how do I deal with that objection? This is where you would reply, what would change between today and tomorrow? Which I actually agree, just to ask, like, what is 24 hours going to do?
Yeah.
But then he replies, let's do this, all caps, so that you can start enjoying it, benefiting from it. And I said, my goal is simply to uncover more information and help my potential clients see their situation in a new and more complete light, not to close them.
Right.
To which he said, sort of nicely patted me on the head, like, oh, there, naive salesperson. And he says, you're not the first person throughout my career who's had different views on closing. There is no value to your client until the close occurs. So in essence, you are doing them a favor by closing. What do you think about this, Philip?
I think there's a world of difference between selling a product like a car, in which case there's lots of, I think in most places, legislation that protects the buyer, and selling professional services. Okay, so I know that's almost an ad hominem attack against that guy, and that's not what I'm trying to do. I think he might be coming from a very different place.
Yeah, so one thing I was going to point out is that he's in a completely commoditized business. And yeah, if anything, exactly. He's at an extreme disadvantage over a company like CarMax or TrueCar that has access to tons of data, and they're pulling people to them rather than attacking on the floor.
Yeah, right. That's really what I was trying to say, is maybe that's true in his business, and or maybe that works. But I just have seen so many examples listed via the people I work with, my clients, where if they really are competent, and they all are, some of them are quite good at what they do, but they're all at least competent. And someone is like, there's so many situations where they will see a client go for some other alternative that's cheaper, and then the client will come back later and express regret and sometimes hire them because the cheaper thing didn't work out.
Right.
And that informs this idea I have that you should really never push to quote unquote close. I read this book, or I've read two books by Jim Camp on negotiation, one of which is far better than the other, even though their content is quite similar. And he had this phrase that I just love. Somewhere in both of those books, he said, your goal is not to get a yes. Your goal is to get an agreement that will stick.
Yes.
And there's so many opportunities. First of all, buying a used car is not a relationship. It's a transaction. I mean, it might be a brief relationship, but it is a relationship in service of a transaction. And professional services is much more about the relationship, because you're going to have to be working with your client most of the time for months, maybe years, to achieve the result. So it is much more, the dynamics are so different. And to me, it's sort of like, would you want to start a marriage by pushing that person to marry you before they were sure they wanted to spend the rest of their, I would say life, but it's so common that people don't do that. So would you want to be in a long-term relationship where you push that person into it? No, because the relationship would suck as a result.
Right. Another thing I'd point out is, if you, dear listener, are one of the people who have employees and you're not the person servicing the contract when you sell, mm-hmm. One thing that you still have to deal with is that client is going to be working with your company, and you've already created an extremely negative impression of you and your company, even if they do business with you. that customer is definitely going to churn out. Well, maybe not definitely, but very, very likely. And when I hear this closing stuff, I mean, first of all, let's just entertain what this guy said and the likelihood that anybody needs a new car that much is very low, right? Did the airbags get stolen and they can't be replaced and therefore it's unsafe? Like, it's very unlikely that anybody really, really, really needs a new car and that you're pushing them towards a new car for a benefit of theirs. It's sort of preposterous on its face in most scenarios.
Yeah.
Going back to this idea of the long game, closing is the opposite of the long game. I think it's perfectly okay to say to someone, to remind them why they're talking to you in the first place, what problems they have, what would be different if they actually solve those problems. I think that's totally fine. But if they still say, you know what, now's not the time, then I'm like, okay, great. What would you like to do from here? Or maybe I'll just say, cool, I'll add you to my newsletter and I'll check in with you in 3 to 6 months. How's that sound?
Yeah.
But this idea of serving, I don't know the exact numbers, but definitely two people who are part of Consulting Sales Bootcamp bought the bootcamp months after our first phone call and after we first met. Now, certainly the used car salesman, now I'm just being derogatory. Like, I don't actually know if he sells used or new cars. But the car guy, let's say, the guy who sells cars. Sorry, car guy. He may look at me and say, well, you should have been more aggressive because you could have given them results faster. To which I would say, look, I am playing a 50-year game. Like, I'm playing a game that in my mind never ends, right? So long as I'm alive. And I want to do what's best for people. And some people may not be ready. And that's out of our hands. And so part of being in service is to tell people, I think, the truth, which may be we should work together, but it may also be, okay, you heard that we should work together, but you're not ready yet. So we'll wait and kind of cool out on that for a while.
I might be pushing it a little bit too far, but I do think there's this category of things that are just transactions, like buying the car or buying some product for your house. And I think people who sell those commoditized things, like you pointed out, are in such a difficult situation that maybe they can convince themselves and they can say things like, well, they don't get the value until they buy it. So I should help them by giving them this sort of subtle pressure to buy it more quickly. But there's just so many thousands of ways that a professional services relationship can fail to produce value because of the dynamics of the relationship, communication, power struggles, resentments, shit like that can totally undermine the value. And all of that stuff is established during the sales conversation. Some of it, I guess, is not, like, there's just sort of personality characteristics of a client or ways they do things that aren't, but so much of it can be figured out. That's why I like thinking about a sales conversation as a negotiation. And that's why I like this idea that if you're going to come to some agreement, AKA the terms of the deal and payment, you want it to stick. You want it to be something you're both, not something you both begrudgingly live with, or one of you begrudgingly lives with and the other feels like they got one over on their counterpart, but something that feels really good to both people. And that's why I just cannot imagine the idea of applying pressure to close.
Yeah. To your question, when do you know when to move forward? I don't know if I've answered that in a satisfactory way. So let me try now. In the discovery process, what I'm really looking for is, what are the person's problems? What goals are they after? And are those goals realistic in the context of the problems? What value would they receive from solving those problems? And also, do I think I could be the person to give them and satisfy all three of those criteria? Right. So if I reach that endpoint and I say, yeah, definitely, to me, I'm still not selling. I'm just serving by saying, like, you're in the right place. I'm the person who can help you with this. Because the more I talk about selling, the more I realize it comes with this awful baggage where people's perception, and actually do email me about this. If you have a perception about sales, I'd love to know. Liston at liston.io, whatever it is, let me know. But a lot of people, their perception is that selling is about convincing someone to do something that they otherwise don't want to do, or imposing our will and getting over on someone. And like, that's not what this is at all. And so maybe if you can look at it as being in service, even if that means saying, look, I have the facts, and based on the facts, I can help you. We should talk about working together. Do you want to do that? Like, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah. In an ideal world, a doctor is not going to prescribe a surgical procedure, even if they're the one who would do it and they're the one who would get paid for it. They're not going to prescribe that procedure if it's not right, if it's not the right thing. Maybe that doesn't really work that way, but in the ideal world, that's how it would work. Have you ever encountered people who do think you should, in the context of selling professional services, who do think you should apply pressure at the close?
Who specifically give advice to consultants?
Or who do it, maybe people you've worked with who do it themselves?
Yeah, we mutually know people, and I won't say who put a tremendous amount of pressure through artificial urgency after a phone call.
So why do you think they do that? That's really the question I was getting at. Like, why do they think it's cool to do that, or it's desirable to do that in the context of selling services? I'm trying to get away from our used car guy here.
There's two things that I want to share with you. One is a quote by Ben Franklin, in which he says, man is a rational animal. And what he was saying is, we will rationalize our actions, and we're smart enough to rationalize even our crudest actions, right? Second thing I want to tell you about, there's this great movie called The Queen of Versailles. Have you seen it?
I don't think so, no.
It's a documentary about this mega successful real estate developer and his wife, who has just an insatiable appetite for fancy things and gold-plated homes.
I have seen it. Oh my God, that was yeah, I have seen it.
So one of the big products that they were selling was timeshares. And timeshare is kind of a product. It's basically a service though, right? Like, you go and get to use something for a limited time. And they showed the guy's son training the sales team to sell timeshares. And this is right before the financial collapse. And one of the things he kept saying is, people die early deaths because they're overworked. People are overworked because they don't take vacations. When they take vacations, they live longer. We are literally saving lives. Go out there and save lives.
Woo. Wow.
Why am I talking about all this? Man is a rational animal, and we're literally saving lives. I think a lot of people convince themselves that what they're doing is so vital to the person that they're selling to, that they're willing to apply probably an exaggerated amount of pressure onto the situation. Now, I think there is something to what Car Guy said, which is, if I'm certain that I can help this person, like, it is true. I can't give them any value unless we're working together. That's true. Mm-hmm. However, I think a great way to instigate more buyer's remorse and more sort of just feeling gross is to apply that pressure. And my feeling is, if you need to do that, you don't have enough leads. What you should be looking to do is create more conversations with people that you can potentially serve, so that you're not having to create these artificial situations that just leave everybody sort of not feeling very good about themselves.
Okay. So to summarize, you're saying there's this real scarcity situation, and then there's a sort of mindset of like justifying or rationalizing the pressure in order just to sleep better at night.
Let's put it this way. I think one thing that I believe is, so in what you and I do, Philip, we require a lot of our clients. Right. So in my boot camp, for instance, if someone's not ready for that, it's going to be a lot of work and they're going to fall behind in a week or two if they're not fully like, fuck yes, I need to do this.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a situation where if they only bought because of the pressure that I applied to them, which I could probably do very persuasively, if they only bought because of that, they're probably going to fall behind in a week or two, and most of that investment's going to be gone.
Well, that's not the whole of it. I would imagine they fall behind, and then there's this sourness in how they feel about the whole thing.
Yeah.
All the way back to, like, retroactively noticing pressure that they maybe didn't notice during the sales conversation, but now they start to see when you create that kind of situation, it spirals downward. It gets worse because you've now got someone who's unhappy and festering about it and now sort of picking apart everything about it. And that is just the worst kind of unhappy client.
Well, so I often talk about taking control of your business, and that's one of the reasons you should really think about upping your sales skills, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that in the long run, if you want to build something, especially that grows way beyond yourself and has the sort of engine behind it that just keeps working over time as time goes, the flywheel keeps spinning faster and faster and faster. Word of mouth is a critical element in that, right?
Right.
So for every client I serve this year, if moving forward, they each tell one person who becomes a lead, right? Or they each tell, say, three people who become leads of mine, I'm going to continue to multiply my business every single year. Now, if I'm putting people in a situation that makes them extremely uncomfortable and sort of makes it a moot point that I would ever be referred because they're like, yeah, he's good, but he's kind of a dick. Right? Like, that's not the kind of thing that you want to build in your business. And I'm not saying that adding a little bit of pressure, a little bit of urgency will necessarily create that reaction, but it's much more likely to. And this all goes back to playing the long game and really doing what's in the best interest of the person you're working with.
This is a little bit of a tiny tangent, but have you and I talked about this recently? People are disincentivized to see themselves as people who make mistakes with thousands of dollars of money. We're disincentivized to do that because it screws with our self-image.
Well, it's cognitive dissonance because you say, I'm a person who makes good decisions. Oh, damn, that wasn't a good one.
Right. And then you're like, you add to that, oh, I was influenced by this really charismatic, manipulative person.
Yeah.
That makes you feel worse about yourself. And so I think what that does is so terrible because it causes people to blame themselves for falling victim to not an outright scam, but to falling victim to someone pressuring them to do something that they knew better.
Well, and if it doesn't work out, of course, whose fault is it? Yours.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know if this is the best way to think about it. I don't think it's ideal, but basically being so sure that the fit is right, that it's not that you don't think to suggest moving to the next step, but it's almost like the prospect suggests that to you.
Right.
Or it's just so obvious that they might have said it first. Again, I don't think that's the perfect way to think about it, but that's kind of how I think about closing is we need to be at that point where it's just like there's only one next step and it's obvious to both of us. And that next step is let's move forward with a paid thing.
I agree with you just because of what I'm trying to build and the way I'm trying to build it. So I do agree with you. I do want to give a couple more examples of how to serve. And it's no exaggeration that I just recorded a podcast on the Liston.io show on this topic. So if you want a little bit more depth here, feel free to go there and listen to it. But one thing is I'm huge on content. You're huge on content, Philip. I imagine maybe it's just the warm glow and like me wanting to tell myself I'm doing something great with offline, but I imagine offline is a form of service. I imagine my newsletter is a form of service. I imagine my LinkedIn videos are a form of service. So I don't feel guilty when someone sends me a LinkedIn message and says, "Will you review my LinkedIn profile since you're all about service?" I'm sort of like, well, there's all these other ways that I've helped you too, right? Like I also am creating a business here. This isn't a nonprofit charity. So the idea that there's no limit to the way we would serve people seems a little bit absurd, but the nice thing about content is it can be shared ad infinitum. Anybody can consume it. Anybody can get the benefit from it. And so that's why I'm huge on that. Another thing is introductions. So can you introduce someone to someone else? I think this happens unsolicited mostly. There's just all these things that we can do for other people that don't take much of our time, but really put us in service to others. So I could keep going on, Philip, but I think we might want to leave it there.
Yeah, my hard drive's running out of space, so we'll have to wrap it up. No, I'm just kidding about that, but that might be a good place to start to wind down.
And if you'd like to donate to Philip's GoFundMe for an external hard drive.
That was really just a red herring. I recently wiped and reinstalled my computer, so actually I'm pretty set on available hard drive space, which is rare.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, I started using an external hard drive for the first time in a long time because of my videos are just huge. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even doing 4K yet. So just wait for that when everything multiplies by 4.
I want to be able to see every pore on your skin.
I know, it's a little weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, I will say, Philip, this weekend I was watching Planet Earth 2. I'm a huge fan of this series. Uh-huh. And it's in 4K. And I told my wife, I was like, I want to buy a TV just to watch this show in 4K.
Nice.
She didn't go for it, though.
Better luck next time, buddy.
Yes, sir. Well, Philip, it was good to talk to you.
You too, my man. See you next week.